Welcome to Building My Legacy Podcast. This podcast is designed for leaders and entrepreneurs who want to leave a legacy and will provide strategies that focus upon key elements for legacy creation, determining your desired impact and its benefit, increasing your legacy's reach by engaging key stakeholders, planning, prioritizing, and executing. Here's your host, Dr. Lois Sonstegard.
Welcome, everybody, to today's Building My Legacy podcast. I have with me today Neil Mirkandani. He is the CEO of an interesting company. It's called LLL Event Furnishing Rentals. What he does is he manages events for or provides the furnishings for events that are held by really big people like Elton John. He's worked with the NFL on Super Bowl after parties, for example. He comes out of the entertainment business in Atlanta, so comes with an incredible amount of experience. He's considered the number one furnishings provider in the South for film sets, music, videos, sporting, corporate, and other events. So, Neil, welcome to Building My Legacy podcast today. It's so good to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So tell me, how did you get started in the furnishings business?
I got started in the furnishings business when I was, about 15 or 16 years old, and I was DJing parties to make a living. That was my job. That was the way I would make a living. And I soon realized that after maybe 30 years old, it's probably not going to be cool anymore to be the DJ at a wedding because only the young really make it for a while. So I wanted to think of a way to branch off from that and actually expand that in such a way where I wouldn't necessarily be needed personally. And so I realized when I was 15 years old, all the way through 16, 17, 18, 19, that there was no way that I was going to do this in my older years. So let's say past 30 years old, it just wasn't going to be cool anymore. So what I did was I was thinking of ways to expand the business that wouldn't necessarily involve me one-on-one and that would allow me to actually grow a business out of it. And so started renting lighting to my clients when I was DJing, and then clients took it. And I realized that that was working. And then eventually asked me once if they could rent furniture from me. I didn't know anything about it, but I said yes, purchased a couple of sofas, and it kind of blossomed from there.
It's all about saying yes, isn't it?
It is in the beginning, of course.
It's all about saying yes. But I want to go back to 15 as a young age to start working. What inspired you at 15? To begin working?
That is a great question. You know, my father always had great work ethic. And so he taught me to have good work ethic from the beginning. And it was just something that was just instilled in me. So I didn't really know any other way but to start working. And I also knew that, and I feel blessed to know, or to at least have realized early on, that in order to be excellent, in order to actually excel beyond, you know, any of my peers, I'm going to have to work harder than them. So while all of my friends were out partying or enjoying their weekends watching TV, I was using that time to try to earn a living and make money and just support myself. And I knew just early on that hard work is what is really going to pay off eventually.
Hard work pays off, and it's that work ethic. So there's something else that you've said that fascinates me, because I think it's where people often get stuck. And that is, you came to a realization what you were doing around 30 wasn't going to keep working. And so you then were able to make a pivot. Tell us a little bit about that, because pivoting is where people often get challenged.
Yeah. So, well, in my case, I made the pivot before. You know, just being able to see before that this was not going to happen. So I didn't have to pivot last minute. And, you know, if you do something too late, it comes out of necessity and then you start to make bad decisions. If you are able to realize it early on you can make better decisions and take your time in doing it. So in my case, when I was doing that, I did realize it early on. And I also knew I didn't need to make money off of this furniture that I was buying immediately. It could take some time. It's okay, because I was still able to DJ for, let's say, another 5-6 years. And so, you know, I wanted to do something different, to plant a seed at that time so that I could have time to actually let it grow. And I knew that if I did it too late, if I did anything too late, I would be doing things out of necessity, and maybe I would need that quick check then. And that's probably, as you know, just as well as anybody else, it's the worst time when you have to do that.
It is often the worst time, isn't it? You're right. We make poor decisions when we come out of that.
Yeah.
Tell me, as you've made that transition, as you've really built a very different and incredibly successful business, what do you owe your success to? What do you think has really contributed to your making it in the South, being number one? That's unbelievable, right? That's great success.
Yeah, it is. I think there's a few things, but I would say if I had to narrow it down to, let's say, two things, I would narrow it down to patience, number one, and two, knowing that in order to grow, it has to be beyond me. You have to empower a team around you to actually grow and to actually do something big. There's only so much I can do by myself. There's only so much you can do by yourself. Anybody can do by themselves. Anybody who's done anything great usually has a pretty powerful team around them, and I'm no different.
You have a powerful team behind you. It takes a strong ego to be able to do that. And I think that's one of the problems, is our egos don't allow other people in sometimes to advise us, to help us. We want to control, right?
So absolutely.
How have you overcome that?
Well, you know, I can control certain things. I can control certain aspects of my business. I guess on paper, I can control all of it. But I have to realize, and it did take me a long time to realize it, longer than I would have hoped, that when I hire somebody, I'm hiring them for a position to do better than I could do at that position. So down to the frontline employee, down to my salespeople, it doesn't matter who it is. If I'm hiring a salesperson, I want them to perform better at that role than I can. And I want them to teach me and challenge me on maybe what I'm coaching them to do as well. Without those smart people around, I'm not going to be challenged. I'm never going to grow. I do not want to be the smartest person in that room, because then I'm simply a teacher of only my knowledge base, and I'm never going to learn anything. So I do feel like I learned that early on, and I'm glad that I did, because I took a little bit of time to realize it, but I'm glad that I finally did.
Was there an event that happened that caused you to learn that? Because I think that is one of the biggest problems owners, CEOs have, is they're afraid of not being the smartest person in the room. And they don't realize that they've actually limited themselves.
Yeah, it definitely hinders your growth to do that. There wasn't one specific event where that made me have that realization. I think it was just over time in getting advice from other business owners, and I was never afraid to do that, picking up the phone to just call somebody, and the worst I could get is a hang up or a no, I'm not going to help you. But in talking to other people around, other smart business owners, other people of reasonably high positions. And then realizing over time, when I was physically at events in the beginning, I was physically supervising them. I was physically, when I had one employee and three contractors, I would be there, my phone would be ringing, or my email inbox would be coming through with potential clients. And I couldn't tend to them because I was busy overseeing what was going on. And Jeff Bezos, CEO of Amazon, right? He made a really smart statement one time, and he said that if he has to focus on what's going on today with the operations, delivering packages, let's say, something's clearly wrong with the business. He needs to be focused on the future. And I need to be focused on managing what is going on around the business and everything surrounding it, economic things, how we can grow the business, et cetera, and let the people who I'm hiring do their job.
Let the people you're hiring do the job. There's something else in your career that fascinates me. You went from DJing, which is sort of an ad hoc, come as you go. You don't know who you're going to get. Generally, it's people that have known you, friends, family. You went from that to working with some really big powerhouses like Elton John and the NFL. What allowed you to have the confidence to move into that instead of saying, oh, I'm not ready, I'm less than, I'm not good enough, right? Those, those conversations that stop many people.
Yeah, that's, and you know what? That's interesting because I don't feel like any step I've ever taken in my business, I've ever been ready for it. Whether it be a move, whether it be hiring the next employee, I don't feel like I've ever been ready for it, nor the client that you're asking about. I was never ready to take on the NFL or you know, the NFL, NBA, or any of those clients, or Elton John, as you mentioned, any of the people we work with as a client, let's say. I never felt ready for it, but I knew that if I took it, that's one of those challenges that I have to face. When I put myself into that corner, there's no choice but to execute, and to execute with excellence. So I have a weird way of just putting myself in that uncomfortable position to where you just got to take it and figure it out. And that's probably what helped me get through it. But it also took, back to my earlier statement, patience. That doesn't come overnight. You have to have a reasonable client roster to get those referrals. You have to have that. And that doesn't come overnight. That takes years to be able to get of reputation and of executing to reasonable capacity and actually doing well in order to actually get those people knocking at your door.
So I find that interesting also, because in today's world, we are an instant world. Social media has led us to believe that today I post something, tomorrow I'm a multimillionaire, right?
That is correct.
So there's an incredible impatience, and I see it especially as you move with younger and younger people. There is the sense of, well, why should I work? I can do something on the internet and tomorrow I'll be rich. I can go on vacations. I can whatever. So how did you patience and that that's time. How did you manage that for yourself in terms of having that future perspective, not getting lost in it, not getting lost in your dream, but moving consistently forward toward it so you felt there was progress?
Yeah. So, you know, that is one of the few reasons that I look at my competitors, is because I see what everybody else is doing. And I, again, go back to my statement that if I want to do something excellent, I have to do something different. I have to take the road less traveled. And if everybody is, as you say, and you're 100% correct, looking for that quick millionaire or quick dollar because they're online looking and saying that they're going to be successful overnight, I know I have to be opposite of that in order to actually truly get that success, because I can't be in a rat race to go and get the quick money. And, you know, the other thing is that I know that I'm not in a business that is, I mean, I have to look at it realistically. Realistically, you know, if, for instance, when I started, I had two sofas. You know, I have to be real about it. I can fool myself to think that I'm going to get a call from some huge celebrity to go and furnish their event. But with what? With what am I going to do that? I have to be real about it and say, all right, I have to crawl before I walk. I have to be able to service some of these smaller ones and mess up some things before I take on a huge client, because I certainly don't want to mess that up. So it does take a little bit of self-discipline, which is very tough. But, you know, that is, there's really no other choice in order to actually succeed in this, in what we're doing, at least.
So as you look at people coming up in the ranks, young people, what's your advice to them?
My advice to anybody coming up in the ranks is pick something that you want to do, whether that be getting a job somewhere, or starting a business, whatever it might be, and stick with it. You don't need to have an extreme passion for it, but I think you need to at least reasonably like it to where you're not just miserable going into the office every single day, and stick with it and try to let go of the noise around you. There's a lot of noise, as you mentioned, 100% correct, that, you know, you turn on Shark Tank, all of a sudden everybody feels like they're a millionaire. You turn on the TV and everybody, or YouTube, and everybody's talking about all the money they made next to a fancy car. it's important to really push that noise aside and look at what it's really going to take to build something. And it's going to take time. For some people, they might get lucky. They might have a lottery win and they might do something overnight, but it's a blessing to be able to let it take time because it gives you a lot more experience. It gives you a lot more wisdom if you allow it to just marinate and take time. And it also makes you feel a lot more self-accomplished if it takes time rather than it happening overnight.
Allow it to take time, allow it to marinate. I love that phrase because food is much better that way, isn't it?
But absolutely.
In life, we don't always like to do that. When you look for employees, Neil, what do you look for?
You know, I look for a couple of things. I look for loyalty. I look for work ethic. Those are the two main things I'll look for. And beyond those two, I would say I look for attitude. I would rather hire somebody with a great attitude who is a B player than somebody with a nasty attitude who's an A-plus player. I can teach somebody how to do something. I can't teach somebody to have a great attitude. I can't teach somebody work ethic. And so those are certain things you can't teach. But the skill set of doing the job itself, that's something that can be taught. If you have a great A attitude, if you have good work ethic, that's all. That's all I really need from somebody.
Can you interview for loyalty? How do you know?
Can you interview for loyalty?
How do you know if you've got that in somebody before you get them?
Yeah, that's a good question. I in my personal experience, you can't interview for loyalty, but history tends to repeat itself. So if I see a resume come through, the first thing I look for in that resume is how many jobs are on that interview. I'm sorry, on the resume. If I see a bunch of hopping of job to job to job to job to job, this person's either lost or they just have an inherent issue where they keep having problems at their jobs. And so it's somebody, I actually disregard those immediately. So to answer your question of if I can interview for loyalty, I wouldn't say you can interview for loyalty, but you can look for certain signs that somebody's going to stick with the business and stick with you based on their history of where they've worked or what they've done.
I think we're beginning to hear that more from people that they want loyalty, but knowing what that means. And loyalty is a two-way street, right? It's the employee needs to be loyal, but there's also hidden in that an assumption that the employer, there will be some loyalty there too. Is that your sense?
Yeah. I think that we have a duty as employers to be loyal to our employees as long as there's a mutual understanding of what we are giving one another. I should not over expect from my employee. They should not over expect from me. There needs to be an understanding of who, you know, what people are expecting. And if I expect my employee to do X, Y, Z, they should execute upon that. And if they do said thing, I'm going to be loyal to them and make sure they are on top of my list for whatever it is, whether it be a promotion, whether it be, taking their advice on another employee or taking their advice on a big business decision. I will continue to be loyal to that person as long as I see those things being met with extra.
You also do some interesting things with employees. Right now, that's a huge thing. How do we retain employees? And you're in a field where people can come and go quickly, right? You can go to the next job that pays $5 an hour more. And so that revolving door is in that group of people that you will employ. So how have you managed that?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think that's an issue in any business. You know, anybody at any level can really, not at any level, but at most levels can look around for the next dollar. But there's a reason that people don't do that. And so what I try to do is I try to look for reasons beyond the rat race of chasing the next dollar to be able to retain employees. And I wouldn't say I'm the best at it, but I certainly try and I feel like it works pretty well. We bonus our employees in creative ways beyond just paying them above industry average. So we bonus our employees in creative ways such as after working after a certain time, We give our employees an on-time bonus, which is a controversial thing that from anybody who I've spoken to, but we do it, and it tends to work. And so there's little things like that I feel that you can do to actually retain employees over the competition.
Okay, so I want to talk about that a little bit, because people are desperate right now for ways of how do we keep the people that we've got. And so on-time bonus, you pay a bonus to people mm-hmm. simply showing up on time. Did I hear that correctly?
Absolutely.
Okay, yep. So talk about that, please.
Well, and I want to be clear about that. That's not that we are, I make sure that when I put that into place, that we're not accepting just that people would come in late. It's more of a creative way to create some type of a fun atmosphere whenever our people come in the morning. So for example, you know, our people are, most of our hourly workers, they're supposed to be in, let's say, at 7 o'clock in the morning. Well, when we give them an on-time bonus, they were on time even before we started this, but we attached $50 to each of their names. And now we see at 6:58, someone's rushing in the door and they start joking around with another employee. Hey, I beat you here. Hey, I beat you here. And it creates this camaraderie. It creates this camaraderie mixed with competition, actually, because what happens is if somebody is late, even by 1 minute, the $50 that's attached to their name gets dropped by them and distributed amongst anybody else who's on that board. So people now just find it kind of fun. They find it a little bit fun/embarrassing to find their name in red, because that means that they were late one time. And they don't, it just creates another thing to talk about in the workplace and not focus on that extra dollar an hour. And if you could do little things like that in the workplace, believe it or not, I mean, it might cost an extra, I don't know, couple thousand dollars at a time, but it creates a sense of fun. It creates a different work environment than they're going to find anywhere else.
What else have you done that's been interesting, fun, different, that has allowed you to retain employees?
Well, you know, like I mentioned before, we provide other bonus structures to our employees, but we also try to treat them with a level of respect that's maybe attaching dollars to something else. So, you know, if you give somebody $10, it's a little bit, it's just like a Christmas gift. If you gave somebody a $10 bill wrapped up, it's different than giving them a $10 gift. It's no different. Every single day that our teams are out doing events, they have to go drive trucks, they have to go out there and deliver, they have to be out for longer periods of time. We allow them to use our company credit card to buy lunch. We allow them to, and this is daily. So it makes them feel valued, makes them feel good that they're able to do that. And there's actually a different way of structuring that, giving them the ability to purchase whatever they want with a credit card with the lead's name on it versus just handing them $10 at the front of the day or $20 at the front of the day. It's valued differently just on how it's approached, even though the outcome's the same thing. So stuff like that is what we do.
So basically what you're really doing is saying, I trust you. I mean, that giving somebody a credit card says, I trust you. I trust your judgment. I trust how you'll spend money. And that says a lot, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And I'm, you know, it might not be a popular opinion, but I'm one to first trust and then, you know, let somebody fail at that rather than just go up with my guard up and not trust somebody. So I feel like I trust all of our people, and I feel like everybody's inherently good, and they're trying to do good until you give them a reason not to. And so the best thing I can do, and this goes back to loyalty too, is just try my best to make everybody feel valued and try to create an atmosphere where people do not want to be dishonest, where people do not want to retaliate, where people do not want to leave just, you know, without giving 2 weeks notice. Those are all things that I feel are very important.
You know, it's so refreshing to hear your perspective, because in many ways we have developed a somewhat punitive system, which is what people are rebelling against in many ways. And we've hurt our own selves. So you've created interesting ways to retain people. What have been your biggest learnings about people, about hiring, about that employee world that you have to operate in that has carried you forward? Bonuses, recognizing them. I hear that. What else have you really learned that is key to your success?
So I would say with regard to people, I have learned that it's not just about money with employees. It's about something more than money. Employees, they do want to see that they're doing a good job. They do want to see that they're part of something bigger than them. They do want to see that. So they, you know, when we go and do an event for a celebrity, or we go and do an event for somebody, some production company, they get an excitement. They get an excitement out of seeing that the furniture that they delivered and set and everything was just on Ozarks, the show, or was just on Love is Blind, or was just on some reunion show. They're going to go home and talk to their spouse about it. They're going to go home and talk to their family and say, hey, we set that up. I mean, those are things that are beyond dollars. And that gets erased. So I have learned that, you know, this is not a battle of employer-employee. It is more of a partnership. And it is one where if you create an environment and you create a place and a product that the employee can be proud of, they're going to be proud of it.
I love that. This is not a battle. And it's an important thing to be reminded of.
Yep.
What do you dream of, Neil? You've done so much. You've been with some of the most important people that we think are most important anyway. What's next for you?
So what I want to do is I would love to grow into multiple locations. Las Vegas being one of them, another one, Miami. But before I do that, that's my short answer to it. But the real boring part that I know I have to go through and that I'm okay with is that I really want to perfect what's going on within our current operation. And I feel like once we do that, the rest is not going to be that difficult. Putting processes and procedures in place to get another location opened up is not so difficult. But in the short term, I really want to focus on getting everything in great shape in our current operation. And then my longer game is to actually open multiple locations.
Okay. So opening multiple locations, but getting those policies, procedures in place, that is the piece I see so often businesses missing. They grow without that. And then They're flying overhead, but they can never quite land.
Yeah. Yeah. That goes back to patience, right? You have to be patient. It's very easy. You know, at where we are right now, it's easy for me to go open up another location. The money won't be an issue. The location won't be an issue. And, you know, in theory, hiring people won't be an issue, but all those things really will be an issue. If there's not certain ground rules set, if there's not certain things actually set beforehand. So I don't feel like it's responsible of me to go and do those things unless I feel 100% confident that what we're doing currently is on point.
Got it. I love that perspective. Again, it's back to what you said when we first began, discipline, right?
It is 100%. Yeah.
Neil, what have we omitted that we should have talked about? Our time is almost up. I want to make sure we've really covered things that are you're passionate about, because you have done so much thinking.
Mm-hmm. The last thing I would say that I feel I learned and that I want everybody else to do is to do what you can while you can. And I wish I could frame that and put that on my wall, because if everybody does that, if I did that earlier on, I actually would have grown faster even while remaining patient. And what that means is that when you're small, when you're very small, when you're a one-man operation or one-woman operation or two people or three people, you are going to get emails. You are going to get emails that you might have too much ego to respond to. You might get a phone call that you might have too much ego to answer, because you might think, I'm better than that. I'm a business owner. And everybody falls into that trap. A lot of people fall into that trap. And it comes down to even when somebody's on, let's say, gives a nice comment to your post on Instagram and you feel too big to be able to respond to that. Well, I feel very strongly we should do those things. Answer that phone call, answer that email quickly, respond to that Instagram comment. Take every meeting you possibly can, because there's going to be one day when you're too busy, you have too much going on, and you're not going to be able to do that. So it's very important to do what you can while you can.
Do what you can while you can. I think that covers so many things. It's not just answering those social media or emails.
Absolutely.
What you're really saying is people are important and I want to treat you that way. I mean, that's the message behind what you're
Absolutely.
Saying.
Absolutely. I mean, if you interact with that first employee, go shake their hand every single morning, because one day when you have 30 or 40 or 50 employees, you may not be able to physically do that. You may not be able to go and do that. So you should do that and set this foundation that's going to end up just blossoming into some other success for you later on.
Well, what you've also done is you've become a role model for your employees, right? So
when
you hire that manager, they go, oh, this is what Neil would have done, right? There's no longer
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is correct.
I really appreciate your approach, because this is what business is struggling with right now. How do we operate? How do we function? How do we treat each other? And you have taken some of the more difficult population. I think hourly workers we consider are the hardest, because they tend to come and go more quickly, more easily.
Yeah.
And yet you figured out a process for it. So I appreciate that perspective.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything else that you would like to say before we leave our audience today?
No, I think that's it for me. I really appreciate you allowing me to share my perspective on everything.
Well, you have been wonderful. I really, really, it resonates with me, and I think it will with our audience as well. So thank you for that. Thank you for being with us today on Building My Legacy podcast. There will be information about Neil in the show notes. So if any of you are hosting events, looking at something that you're planning down the pike and you need some help, here's a great resource. He's been there, done that, got the experience, and he's got patience and resilience, I think, to bring to any project. So look for information about Neil in the show notes and feel free to contact him. We encourage you to do that. So again, Neil, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Building My Legacy podcast with Dr. Lois Sonstegard. To book your appointment with Dr. Sonstegard, visit www.buildtomorrow.com.